At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Ronaldo's got that twist now and pivot in the air.
Yeah.
I look at him doing that and I'm thinking, ooh, be careful. Yeah. That's like crew shit. That's potential crew shit in the making.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Yeah, 7 minutes past nine this morning. Let's turn to the weekend of rugby. Alan Quinlan is with us. Alan, welcome back. How are you?
Morning, lads. Good, thanks, Joe.
How was the first weekend of the URC?
It was good, yeah. I think there was a lot of good rugby played. The intrigue was obviously, well, how would the South Africans get on and what would they bring to the tournament? They're all off the back of Currie Cups and stuff like that, so they're match fit. So I thought they'd be... I thought, obviously, they're missing their Springboks and stuff like that, so I thought that... particularly in the Bulls and the Sharks game, that they'd run Munster and Leinster a bit closer. But so that was a bit disappointing that there was two big scores there. But it was good to have it back, and you know, hopefully it'll grow and there'll be decent rugby throughout this competition.
Okay, a lot of talk in the papers in the immediate aftermath of the Munster game about how Zeebo is the X factor that Munster needed. They've also got Snyman coming off the bench, so they're slowly working back to a level of fitness. Whatever gaps there were in Munster's squad appear to be disappearing, and there is no longer if only they had strength and depth, if only they had a bit of an X factor, if only they had a bit more grunt in the pack. They've got everything now, so it's now that we can finally judge this team and this coaching ticket and this group of players.
Well, I wouldn't say they have everything. They've a fair bit of depth. I think there's still a couple of areas of concern, probably front row and centres and maybe out half if Carberry's injured again. You know, there's good players coming through, Ben Healy and Jack Crowley, Jake Flannery. But, you know, it seems to have gone against them in the big knockout games and games towards the end of the season when they've had a couple of injuries where those issues have come up. But there's a fair bit of depth there throughout the whole squad. And, you know, when Munster get their full team out in the fields for the big European games and these big knockout stages, I think there'll be an expectation that they have to deliver this time and get their hands on a trophy. And look, they're working hard to do that. And you can't fill every position and have international depth in every position. But there's a fair bit of talent coming through. And as I said, it's still a couple of concerns, maybe around tight head, hooker, international depth, top quality standard there. You know, if Diolinde and Farrell don't play, it could be an issue for them, particularly in the bigger games. But it's exciting for them. But we say that nearly every season. And, you know, I suppose, rightly or wrongly, they get judged pretty harshly. And that expectation is kind of growing again, and having Snyman back is, wow, that's incredible for them. If they can get him fit and get him playing, being involved, he's a game changer. I think Zeebo looks fit, looks hungry. I'm sure he's going to try and make an impression, try and get back into the Irish squad. And, you know, CJ Sander's gone, so Jason Jenkins came in. You know, some people were positive and negative about signing another South African, but there's a lot of talent in the back row. You know, Gavin Coombs on Saturday night, I just think his ability to score tries and just his overall involvement in the game was brilliant. Physically, he's so powerful, still such a young player, and he makes me excited. Thomas Ahern coming off the bench, I think he's incredible potential as well. So there's a couple of really good young players coming through there, and I'm sure Johan van Graan will try and get the best out of him this year, and there's pressure on him and his coach and take it from Munster to you know, even if they don't win a trophy, they've got to have more strings to their bow this year, particularly in those big knockout games.
So there was a lot of talk about in the papers about him getting a new deal. What's your understanding? What do you think is going to happen there? Is the right thing to do to try and have a little bit of longevity and a bit of, you know, not rip everything up again? Or is it to wait and see what happens this year? And if things don't progress, well, then maybe the right thing for everybody is a change.
Yeah, look, I think it's kind of a pivotal period of time for Johan and Stephen Larcombe and Graham Rowntree. The excitement around, particularly Larcombe and Rowntree, when they came in was big. I think there's obviously been a bit of frustration, but the big talking point is maybe the way they've played and the disappointment in some of those knockout games when they've got to them. You know, the most recent one obviously is the Pro 14 final last year, and Munster never really fired a shot. By their own admission, they didn't. They still had a lot of positives throughout the season and a lot of really good performances. The Toulouse game against a really strong Toulouse side, you know, they could have won that game. Played against a brilliant side, no crowd there, probably obviously at Thomond Park makes a huge difference. And rightly or wrongly, they're the ones you're going to be judged on, because there is pressure to try and be in semi-finals, be in finals and win trophies. So I suspect that, I'm not really sure, and it's only speculation, that maybe between here and Christmas, it's kind of similar to players' contracts, you know, that if Johan van Gran is going to get an extension, I suspect in the next kind of 2 to 3 months that that decision will be made. Obviously, for both sides, it has to be made. You know, you can't have a coach going into January, February and not knowing if he's staying on or not, or if his contract has been extended. So I presume the next little while that those discussions will be going on behind the scenes, and there'll be decisions made around that. Obviously, we're not really sure, because, and he's right not to go into it too much the other day when he was asked, but what's his desire to go there? What other options are on the table? You know, does he want to stay on? What's his plan for the future? And where's the progression? Like any organisation, I'm sure it'll be reviewed and looked at. And they're the kind of decisions that have to be made for the next while. So you're talking about longevity and
stability.
I think you don't want a situation where this is running on and it's, he's been asked this every week and the players have been asked it, and that uncertainty is there. Of course you want that stability. But I suspect it'll be between here and the end of the year when there'll be a decision made either way. If it was a case that there was a decision that his contract wasn't being renewed, well, that kind of creates lots of cracks and uncertainty in the group, and it's risky. You make a decision that the coaching ticket is staying the same and there's an extension and some of the performances are poor, well then the noise outside the group starts to increase. So it's a tricky one. But look, over the next period of time, I suppose we'll know more. Look, there is a very good squad there, Gerard, but you know, it's been a good few years now in the same situation come the knockout stage where we've, you know, people have questioned that and been frustrated and disappointed. Not necessarily, and this sounds like a silly statement, not necessarily by being beaten in semifinals or finals, but some of those performances at pivotal in those big games have been really disappointing.
It feels like this has to be a massive season for Joey Carberry, Alan.
Yeah, it does. I think he's obviously, the long layoff and the injury was very difficult for him. He's an incredibly talented player, and I think people want him to succeed, want him to get back in the Irish squad, want to play well. And you know, prior to the World Cup in 19, and probably in, respectfully, I say this with a lesser, stronger squad. When he was starting for Munster and playing for Munster, he was playing very, very well and really important. We haven't seen that kind of spark or excitement from Joey yet. And I did say this last year, and I know when you come back from a long-term injury, it isn't necessarily just about that injured point in your leg or wherever. The rest of the body needs to fire up. You need to get match sharp. You need to get physically ready for it and get that bit of zip going. So he played a good few matches last year towards the end of the season, and we saw glimpses, but we still haven't seen that electric Joey Carby, that exciting, free-flowing. It's not to say these performances are bad, but I think, you know, when you're an international player and you're of the quality he is, I think people want to see that spark back. And he's vital for Munster, absolutely. He's a brilliant player. And I just hope that a run of good form comes to him and he gets a lot of matches and gets physically up to speed.
When it comes then, just to finish up on Munster, if that contract was to be decided in the morning, do you think that Van Graan has done enough to get extended?
It's a difficult question. I think, look, there's been lots of positives and highs in the last number of years and a couple of false dawns. So it's difficult. I think this is, in any sort of assessment of whether a coach stays or not, he's been very unlucky with some of the injuries, notably Carberry and, you know, Snyman coming in, injuries they've had around other players and stuff like that. Even though they've signed a lot of outside players and there's plenty of overseas guys there, there's still a couple of positions that if I was coach, I'd like to strengthen in those areas that they just haven't logistically been allowed to do through the RFU. So, there's been a fair bit of pressure. And like I said, the end of last season probably was the most frustrating with the, you know, that Pro 14 final. And
okay. I guess we'll...
So I don't know. It's a difficult one. I think he's there's a lot of good foundations there, but I just feel that they've got to kick on this year for him, for the players themselves.
Well, it's a good start on Friday in terms of the quality of the performance. To talk briefly about the Leinster performance, obviously they essentially had their access to most of their full first team, and it was interesting in that they went for two out halves essentially at 10 and 12 with Frawley picked at 12. Maybe this is the future for Irish rugby generally, for the late stage Johnny Sexton era. If he's going to be playing for Ireland, which you would expect, that we might have a 12 there who was another out half, so that when Sexton goes off or if Sexton doesn't start, that we have somebody who's getting that level of experience.
Yeah, and I like Kieran Frawley. I think he's a really good footballer. It's a real option from many teams now. You know, your traditional kind of 12 who punches up and runs hard off lineouts and scrums is still a very, very good weapon to have. But to have a footballer there, particularly with, you know, distribution, trying to get width in the game, hopefully this new law, the 50-20-22 law, that's opportunity for players to kick in the backfield and regain the line out, kick from your own half, and obviously if it bounces into touch you get the line out, that the idea of that is to try and get teams to hold some more players in the backfield, and hopefully that we get more expansive rugby. Because look, particularly after the Lions tour, I think you look at the level of attack and the amount of kicking that's in the game, and Leinster kind of, they're a side that do kick a lot as well, but they usually kick a lot when they're ahead and they squeeze the life out of teams, and having an option as a 12 for any team, who obviously you've got to have a physical presence as well and be able to match the opposition when they attack you and run at you, but having that sort of distributor is, I'd be a fan of it for any team. And you know, I think Frawley has done really, really well, and it was a good Leinster performance, I think. You know, Munster played well too, and had a lot of positives, but I just still think some of the distribution in the Munster game needs to get better. And I was probably disappointed with the Sharks and the Bulls, that, you know, as I said, on the back of Currie Cup performances and match fitness, that
they should have been better.
We see two big scorelines, sure, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's really not what the competition needs. It needs much closer games. And in fairness, a lot of the other games were pretty close. The Connacht game, they certainly got a bit of a wake-up call, and I think the Ulster game had plenty of excitement in it as well. So, look, we'll get into Connacht and we'll get into Ulster's performance a little bit later on in the week, and we get the opportunity to preview next weekend as well. We should talk about the biggest story in Irish rugby over the course of the weekend, really, and that's the collapse of the women's team, who now won't even qualify for the repêchage for the World Cup, let alone the World Cup. This is on the back of a disastrous World Cup when the World Cup was staged here. And this, it seems like, is a trend in Irish women's rugby as opposed to a shock.
Yeah. I think, look, there's been a fair few emotional responses from people online. It was heartbreaking to see them lose at the weekend, I think. You know, I was talking with Adrian Friday here, and it's always risky when you're talking about bonus point wins. God be good to poor Axel when we played at Munster and we ever went out needing bonus point wins. You know, he continuously was knocking any sort of talk during the week about it. Always talking about the performance, getting the fundamentals, the basics right. And unfortunately for this Irish women's team, the same problems arose again. Game management, the skill set and the set piece, which has been a problem from the very start. You know, they were favourites to win this tournament and qualify without any problems, but all those issues surfaced against Spain. Things were better against Italy, kind of covered over some of the cracks though, and unfortunately, you know, if your line-out is not functioning, your scrum is under pressure, it's going to be very, very difficult to win games. So I think there's lots of questions to be answered here. But ultimately, you know, I hear people, a lot of people giving out about the RFU and blaming the RFU. It's obviously the RFU have got to take this in the chin, and maybe it'll be reviewed and looked at what can be better. And but ultimately, these performances weren't good enough and the basics weren't there. And that's the most disappointing thing, because to see their heartbreak in the women and the emotion they showed and the disappointment to be not going to New Zealand next year is heartbreaking for them. But unfortunately, the performances weren't good enough.
So is it your view that this isn't just an RFU problem, that the players need to shoulder more responsibility, or is it that actually this needs to be a big moment for the women's game, where we look back at how we had a team that was capable of beating the All Blacks in a World Cup and reaching the semi-finals essentially in the last decade, and we've gone from there to not being good enough to get into a playoff to qualify for the World Cup?
Yeah, look, of course the RFU have got to take responsibility here and look at this and review this and see what they can do better. But the reality here, Ger, is this team have got a lot of support. They've got a lot of support from the union in preparation for this tournament. And I hear a lot of the
Have they though? Like, did we not take some of the best players out of the 15 side and make them play sevens for ages over the last two or three years in the hope of getting to the Olympics? And somehow, like, it seemed like it was not very joined up thinking. If we wanted to qualify for the World Cup, you get your best players playing 15s, you bed them into a team, and the setup becomes good. Like, did we not handicap them?
I think that's worked both ways, because the sevens have a couple of the sevens players have come over and played in the 15s, and that's an issue as well, because of, you know, it's a different game. But let's just look at where the team is at. One of the big issues here is how whoever made the decision to allow the women with very, very, very little rugby played to go into this tournament in that position. When we had Interpros a couple of weeks ago and none of the internationals played, those games are on TV. The game has been showcased here a lot in the last couple of years, and there is a big push to try and give the women the exposure they deserve. Those interpros are on the TV. They should have been moved back a couple of weeks. All those internationals should have been playing in those interpros, getting battle hardened for this tournament. How can you go into a tournament, Chair, with no matches played, really, and expect to get all these issues and problems that arose And we're wondering why they rose, because, you know, there's only so much training. There's a lot of camps in the last year with the team. The AL didn't get back up and running after the pandemic. It did in England and France. That's another issue. You can't just expect to turn up to these tournaments. Are the Spain, Italian, Scottish teams funded more and supported more? Probably not. I think a lot of effort and time. So it's easy to throw all the blame in the air of few and say that it's their fault here. It's not. The coaching team, and if this was the men's team, they'd be ripped apart. So I'm not saying that in any way that the women have to be ripped apart. No, but I think the coaching team here of Adam Griggs and his coaching side have to, you know, take responsibility as well with these performances. Why isn't the lineup working? Why is the catch pass so poor? There's a lot of good players there. You have, you know, Baby Parsons, who's a match winner, not getting the ball. So there's an inability to get this width in the game and stuff like that. So a lot of the basics didn't work here and didn't happen here. And absolutely, there's probably more things that the union could have done. But I think this team has prepared with a lot of camps and the high performance unit, high performance sensor in Aberystwyth. You know, they've conditioners, they've support staff, they've video analysis. It's not as if they're lacking in the recent preparation of this team. What needs to happen and what could be better? The AIL needs to improve, and the grassroots of rugby, to have more options, to have more competitive games, not one-sided games. It's probably four really strong teams, four or five strong teams in the AIL. That has to increase. So there's no quick fix solution here, but the easy thing is to blame the RFU for everything here. Of course they can do better and they can do certain things better. But what we saw in the last couple of weeks, and, you know, the players have to take responsibility themselves, is mistakes and poor performances against teams that they should have beaten. And it's heartbreaking for them. And it's really disappointing. And, you know, my heart went out to them. There's, it's a really tough situation for them. But ultimately, you can't make that many mistakes and expect to win matches.
Okay, we're going to hear more from Fiona Coughlin about this in a couple of minutes' time as well. So just wanted to get your perspective on it too. Alan, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Cheers. Thanks. That's
Alan Quillen giving us his thoughts there on the weekend's URC and, of course, on the women's collapse as well.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.